I'm Shanna Hutchison, dietitian, blogger, and mama, born and raised in the heart of the Midwest. I believe that wellness goes way beyond what we eat and that our body size does not determine our worth. I am passionate about showing other women how to live a life they truly love, one that feels purposeful, that helps them feel their best physically, mentally, and emotionally, and that being a mom can be one of the best things you ever do without it becoming your entire identity. This is a place you can come to hear vulnerable and interesting conversations about health and wellness, motherhood, entrepreneurship, and more. If you want to find freedom with food, learn how to improve your overall well-being, and stop waiting for a number on the scale to start living your best life and go after your goals, then you're in the right place. I'm so excited to learn and grow together. This is the Wellness for the Win podcast. Hello, everyone. I hope you are doing well today. Happy Wednesday if you're listening to this when it goes live. It is currently the week between Christmas and New Year's, which is always kind of a weird, unique time. Most people are on vacation, have their away messages on, their emails, and motivation is very low, and everyone is just kind of checked out and holding out for the new year to get life started again, which I completely understand and fully support. I think it feels like such a marathon leading up to Christmas, and then it's like this weird, sad letdown once it's over. But to me anyway, I think it's also refreshing in a lot of ways too. I think the new year can be an exciting time, and even though it can be a little sad to see it all go away, especially when you have a toddler who absolutely loves all the lights and the decorations, it can also feel really nice and refreshing to put the Christmas decorations away, put away all the extra clutter and stuff, and just clean up and move ahead with new goals and intentions for the new year. So next week, I will share what some of my intentions are for 2023. But for today, I'm sharing an episode that I thought might be helpful and timely for some of you that are listening. So today I have Jen Couch of Sober Sis to talk all about alcohol. And I just wanted to preface this conversation by reiterating that I am not here to say that I think everyone needs to completely give up alcohol and be sober 100% of the time forever. However, I do think that it's worth having an honest conversation about alcohol and really checking in with your relationship with it. And this time of year could be a helpful time to do that, although it's never a bad time to make a change if you feel like that is needed for you for whatever reason. As you all know, I am currently pregnant, so I'm unable to partake in any drinking at the moment. But when I'm not pregnant, you probably also know if you follow me on Instagram, I do enjoy drinking socially on occasion. I like to get margaritas or a beer when I go out to dinner with Ethan. But with that said too, I'm in a place in my life where drinking in excess or more than like one or two drinks, or more than that, depends on what you define as excess. But regardless, drinking too much does not feel good for me physically or mentally at this point in my life. It makes me feel incredibly anxious the next day. It makes me feel crappy and, you know, my stomach hurts, my head hurts, all the things. And I just don't like how I feel when I overdo it. And I also, thankfully, at this point, I have a lot of other healthy coping strategies to help me manage stress or other things going on in my life if I feel like I need an outlet. So I don't feel like, you know, if you feel like maybe you are turning to alcohol to numb out or avoid things in life, or you like need it to get through the day, etc. I hope you will find this conversation helpful. And again, this is not to make anyone feel guilt or shame for drinking at all, or make you feel like you have to give it up completely. But if you are sober, curious, or simply interested in reducing your alcohol intake for any reason, then I hope you'll keep listening and enjoy this conversation. So let's go ahead and dive into this episode with Jen.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for having me. This is just so awesome. I, like you, am passionate about just holistic wellness, like mind, body, spirit, trying to dial it in, but yet not be so rule-oriented or constricted that life isn't fun and that you're not living in the present moment. So yes, my name is Jen Couch, and I am a fairly new empty nester. I just got into a different part of the mom zone. I'm still a mom. It's just because I know you and I were talking about, you have littles, I have olders, but it's amazing how the mom journey continues on.
Yeah.
And so I'm in this new phase, and a lot of people were like, Jen, what are you going to do when you graduate high school and like move off and go to college and then even do that and graduate that?
Yeah.
And I always say, you're looking at it. I did not know. I cannot tell you how I did not see this coming, that this is what I get to be doing. Because actually, a part of my story is I'm a little bit later in life drinker. I didn't even really start drinking as a kind of a routine. It kind of started out that way as a little bit of a kind of a routine where it was just kind of a social thing on the weekend. And then it turned into wine o'clock on a Tuesday night while I was cooking. Mm-hmm. And it was that reward that got to be that routine.
Yeah.
So before I knew it, there I was kind of stuck in what I call the detox to retox loop, where I was so healthy and mindful by day and then kind of mindlessly sipping.
So
that's what I'm passionate about. That's what I do now, is I help women understand more about that loop, that it's really a lot of it's not their fault. A lot of it is just the nature of alcohol, the marketing and messaging to moms today. And you know all about, I'm sure it's just an onslaught of kind of that mommy juice wine culture out there. That's kind of like, woo, need it to do the mom thing, need it to relax. And there's nothing wrong with a glass of wine. I think you and I are actually coming from a lot of the same place.
Yeah.
Where it's less about the alcohol and more about, is it serving you? And so that's what I love to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And I just love this conversation and this topic. And ironically, you know, of course, right now I'm pregnant, so I can't, you know, I can't enjoy alcohol even if I wanted to. But, you know, even before I was pregnant, I was kind of sharing some thoughts on this topic because, you know, similar to conversations I have with people as a dietitian struggling with like their relationship with food, I think alcohol, I think there's a lot of overlap in how people are using food and using alcohol to cope or to, you know, get through things, or like you said, to unwind at the end of the day, and just recognizing, is this serving me? Do I feel like this is helpful or harmful? And just some of the, you know, benefits that we may notice if we kind of like check in with those things and reduce those things and find alternative strategies. So we'll definitely dive deep into that. But I just love, you know, you sharing your story and widely sharing this with such a wide community, because I think it just, again, it's one of those things where it's so routine for people that they don't even think about it. It's just like second nature. They just, you know, pour a glass of wine when they get home. And so, yeah, just kind of hopefully this will make people kind of curious and say, okay, you know, again, it's not about restriction. It's not about all or nothing. But, you know, are there times where maybe I could benefit from something else? So, yes, I can't wait to dive into this. So one thing you kind of talk about is being sober minded and renegotiating your relationship with alcohol. So can you kind of speak to that a little bit on, you know, what does it mean to be sober minded as opposed to maybe not?
Right. I love it. You know, and it's funny because out there, I know there's a lot of buzzwords, pun intended. there's a lot of buzzwords that kind of tend to turn people on or off when talking about drinking. Even for example, for me, kind of being in that gray area drinking zone, which is another thing that a lot of people don't really realize, that there's a drinking spectrum out there.
Yeah.
And that there's even something called alcohol use disorder, which is almost like kind of where you fall in the dependency scale versus it being all or nothing. Either you can take it or leave it and it's nothing to you, or you're full blown alcoholic, physically addicted. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't me. Neither one was me. I found myself in that gray area. Mm-hmm. And so when I heard people talking about words like sober, sobriety, recovery, addiction, addicts, AA, it's like my brain kind of like shut off. And I was like, whoa, that's not me.
Right.
And those words didn't really grab my attention. Mm-hmm. If anything, it kind of made me justify my drinking where it was, because it wasn't at a rock bottom spot. Mm-hmm. And so I really preferred to go at it a different way. I kind of go at looking at this more about being sober minded, which is about being awake, alert, present in your own life. Mm-hmm. Sober minded, being sober of mind, being present. I've got a new book coming out this spring of 2023, called Amazing. Look Alive, sis. It's just that whole concept of like, look alive mm-hmm. in your own life. And to me, that's what being sober-minded is all about. It's more about presence. Mm-hmm. It's more about being all there than it is about numbing out, checking out, or just living on autopilot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. And I think that will resonate with so many people who are listening about being kind of in that in-between gray area. I got several messages or comments from people saying that where they're like, okay, how do I like either scale back from alcohol or remove it completely without people assuming that I have a problem with it or that I am an alcoholic? Because, you know, several people were like, you know, I'm someone who prefers to be alcohol free, but I feel this pressure to drink because everyone else is drinking. And, you know, and someone was like, why is it taboo to find someone who doesn't drink? And you have to like question, why aren't you drinking? Are you pregnant? Are you this? Are you that? And it's like, why can't I just say, I don't want to drink right now, or I'm not in the mood, or just simply I don't drink, period. You know, it's definitely a hard thing, I think, in our culture, especially. So, you know, what was your experience with that? You know, have you made the decision to be completely 100% alcohol free? And I guess what was that transition like for you?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I love that even me being AKA sober sis, even then the question is posed to me, am I 100% alcohol free? Mm-hmm. Because I like that. I like that it's more about mindfulness than it mm-hmm. is focused on abstinence. Mindfulness. Right. Is more important. So mm-hmm. when I began my own journey in April of 2017, I had just crossed the 45-year-old mark, which I know is a little bit older than maybe some of your audience or listeners. But again, I started drinking as a young mom in my young 30s. I was 32 mm-hmm. when I really noticed, okay, drinking is not my thing yeah, it is. I really enjoy looking forward to this.
Yeah.
So I really had my 30s and early 40s to feel that rhythm of like, mm-hmm. it's part of my social life. It's everywhere I go.
Yeah.
It's what my husband and I do as an activity to kind of adult together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Being littles all day. I was like, mm-hmm. this time I took it out mm-hmm. of that world where I could kind of feel glamorous and adult. And yeah. So for me, being in that gray area, there are so many, sadly, in our culture, there's a stereotype and there's a stigma and there are labels and there mm-hmm. are stigma and stereotypes that come with that label. And I think actually that really kept me stuck for a long time because I was so afraid of being labeled. You know, it's funny. Alcohol is one of those things where nobody really talks about it until there's a problem mm-hmm. or until they have to. And I'd love to help be a part of changing that and creating, yeah. like some of your audience said, you know, I just want to be alcohol free for the health of it, mm-hmm. for the joy of it, because it serves me better. And so for me, it really was important that I kind of controlled the narrative. Mm-hmm. It's my own story. And I didn't want to have to justify why I wasn't using this mm-hmm. anymore. But I will tell you, for me early on, it was a challenge because most people that drink hang out with people that drink.
Right.
It just tends to go together because it's mm-hmm. again, it's such a social thing.
Right.
And yeah, so I really had to be clear on why I was wanting to make this change in my life. And so in April of 2017, that's when I began the journey. And I thought, you know what? I really want to show up differently for the new decade than I did the last decade. How am I going to mm-hmm. do that? It mm-hmm. will not be overnight. And I knew intuitively in my spirit, in my heart of hearts, that if I could get a control on my relationship with drinking, if I could change that one thing, it would be the lead domino that would change other things. Mm-hmm. Better sleep, more energy. If I have more energy, I'm going to want to work out more. If I work out more, I'm going to want to eat better. Like I knew if I could kind of get, this was the one thing that was misaligning. Mm-hmm. So I went on kind of a sober, curious journey. And for 6 weeks, I didn't drink alcohol. And mm-hmm. what was different about this time, because I had taken many breaks before, because I could do a whole 30. I could do a juice cleanse. In fact, mm-hmm. I even blogged about it in 2011. Mm-hmm. I just looked back and read that blog and I was like, wow, that was a decade before I stopped drinking.
Yeah.
Or, yeah. 6, 7 years.
Yeah.
So it was something where I was like a yo-yo drinker, mm-hmm. you know, instead of being a yo-yo dieter, I was like a yo-yo drinker. Mm-hmm. On again, off again. My friends would be like, are you on the wagon? Or are you off the wagon? And I was always confused by that because I never really got the wagon thing. But I was like, well, no, I'm not drinking right now, but like, I'm not going to say never forever. Mm-hmm. And so I went through the process of learning more about alcohol, mindset, habits, more, I kind of went towards it instead of just trying to ignore it. Mm-hmm. And in those 6 weeks, I learned a tremendous amount about myself, about why I was drinking, and about the substance of alcohol itself. Because I really didn't know that much about alcohol. I just knew I craved it and I didn't know why. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand the chemical components of alcohol mm-hmm. and why, similar to sugar and other things, it really kind of creates a thirst for itself. I just thought I was just lacking willpower or had a moral failure when mm-hmm. really I was struggling partly against my own body.
Yeah.
And so after about 6 weeks, I just started feeling so much better physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, all the ways that I thought, you know what? I think I'm going to extend this break mindfully to 100 days. It's like, let's do it. 100 days. That's like three digits. That's like a big deal, especially for someone who is drinking pretty much, you know, I wasn't a binge drinker where I was just like good all week and then went hard on the weekend. I was kind of that, you know, glass or three, 4 to 5 nights a week, just kind of worked it in my book club, my date night, my cooking in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. Before I know it, I mean, it's just adding up.
Yeah.
And so for me to go 100 days, it was a major lifestyle pause. Mm-hmm. But after 100 days, I was like, well, my goodness, I continue to feel better. And I'm actually shocked at now people just don't really care what I'm doing. I care what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. They care what they're doing. They care what they're drinking. But it really wasn't that big of a deal. And the return on investment I was getting from this lifestyle change was so big in my life. I thought, you know what? I think I'm going to carry on. I don't know how long. And so I did. I finished the year of 2017 from that April on. And I got to tell you, the idea for SoberSis was born on Christmas Day, 2017, because I was sitting across the fireplace from my husband. We're just the Christmas before, you know, we'd been sipping on the whatever.
Yeah.
And which was totally normal for us. And I mm-hmm. looked at my husband and I was like, babe, I did it. I didn't drink all through the holidays. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And at that point, I mean, I was just kind of floored because I was really, truly taking it one day at a time, but I'd also kind of pre-decided, I think I just want to finish the year, kind of try all these new experiences without the crutch for me, what had become a crutch of alcohol. Mm-hmm. And that's when I was like, you know what? I wish more women knew what I knew because I'd learned so much in that amount of time. Yeah. Instead of at 1 o'clock drinking, I started listening to podcasts about drinking, mm-hmm. started reading books. I started learning. And so I like switched gears. And that's when I was like, I just want more people to know about this. And then I kept going.
If you are currently pregnant or postpartum and looking for some safe, effective, and quick workouts to do, you have to check out Expecting and Empowered. I used their workout guides during my pregnancy with Rhett, but now they are new and improved and they have an app for your phone, which makes it so easy and convenient to use. They even have Spotify playlists already created for you that you can access to listen to while you work out. These workouts are programmed specifically for your stage of pregnancy and or postpartum, and I know that when I was a first-time mom-to-be, I always felt super nervous about what types of exercise I should or shouldn't be doing, so I love knowing that they are all safe and supportive of the stage that you're in right now. The pregnancy workouts specifically include flexibility, pelvic floor, and strength moves, and they have workouts for upper body, lower body, and then a full body workout day. I have loved using these workouts so far during this pregnancy, and I'm excited to keep using them so I can continue to feel strong leading up to labor and recovery, and of course to keep up with my crazy toddler in the meantime. You can use my affiliate code WellnessForTheWin to save when you sign up for the app. I'll leave all the information for you in the show notes as well. I hope you love it as much as I do.
So yeah. That was 6 years ago, this coming April, that I had my last drink.
Wow. Yeah.
And I did not think that I could do that. I really did not, y'all. If you're out there and you're like, whoa, Nelly, I don't know about that. well, don't know about that. Just take it one day at a time or one challenge at a time, which is what I try to help people do, is break it down. Mm-hmm. Break it down into smaller bites and not have this incredible pressure. I think we as moms and women just put so much pressure on ourselves to perform and get it right. In fact, I think a lot of people that really struggle with drinking are the type A. Mm-hmm. They're the get it done people. We're high control. We work hard. We feel like we kind of deserve it because we're so on and mm-hmm. so over responsible. Sometimes it was kind of like my little escape from being so responsible and mm-hmm. so on it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And I think like you mentioned earlier, you know, it's kind of that domino effect of when you heal your relationship with alcohol. I had a similar experience in when I really repaired my relationship with food. And I noticed that that did impact every other area of my life. And I think, again, there's so many parallels between these two things that oftentimes are used as a crutch, whether it's food or the alcohol or whatever it may be in our culture and our society. And yeah, just encouraging people to really check in with that. And like you said, it doesn't have to be all or nothing, small bites, small chunks. You know, if you want to be completely alcohol free, that's okay. I guess what would you say to someone who's like, again, I don't have a problem. I don't have an addiction. I'm not an alcoholic, but I want to maybe just like reduce my alcohol intake. You know, what would you say to that person where, you know, because again, for me, when I'm not pregnant, I do enjoy, you know, socially drinking. However, I have noticed as I get older, and again, I had several of my followers say this as well, that when they drink, they have so much more anxiety, their mood is affected, all of these things. Like, I mean, as you know, as you get older, the alcohol like affects you so much more. Like the next day, even if you have a couple drinks, you're like, holy moly, I feel like crap today. So it just really affects you. And again, and for me too. And once again, I mean, several of my followers said the same thing, that they feel super anxious when they drink. And I think that's very common. Like, I'm trying to think of what people call it, like the next day.
It's called anxiety.
Yes, anxiety. That's exactly yes, what I was
very saying. Familiar. First-hand yeah. experience with that word.
Yeah, sure. Yes. So a lot of people said that. So, you know, what would you say to people who, again, want to just like reduce their intake and be more mindful of it, but not maybe completely abstain from it?
Totally. And again, starting with an interim amount of time as a goal, and you might feel this way. I'd be curious your opinion on this as a dietitian with food. Sometimes removing something from your diet allows you then to see how you feel without it. And then you can put it back in a different way or at a different time or a different amount. I think it's very true with alcohol to give yourself something like a 21-day challenge. That's about enough time to start to see the results, just to even give you a baseline for how you feel without it in your system. Mm-hmm. I think for most social drinkers, there's never really a feeling of what your body would be like without adjusting from the toxins of alcohol. It takes about 7 to 10 days to get alcohol and its effects out of your system. So you can feel that anxiety for up to 3 days after drinking. So it really takes time to kind of work that out. And then I think when you have that clear, sober mind, and then you can socially kind of practice sometimes saying yes, sometimes saying no, and give yourself kind of almost like the gift of not having it every time and getting off of autopilot. Mm-hmm. I think that's the best approach, is the goal to drink less or not at all, but either way, to give yourself the break. Because if you're always, for me personally, it was the mental, emotional bandwidth that managing drinking was taking for me. Mm-hmm. Just to even set that aside and go, you know what? I'm not drinking for X amount of days, or I'm doing dry January, or I'm doing this challenge. It almost takes it off the table for just a bit. I mean, alcohol is always going to be there. It's right. not going anywhere.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's almost like it kind of frees up your mind to then explore and kind of be curious, like, wow, I was feeling anxious. I didn't drink. And now I feel less anxious. Instead mm-hmm. of I was feeling anxious, I had a couple of glasses of wine and now I'm feeling more anxious.
Yeah.
It's hard to know the contrast unless you take the break.
For sure. Totally. And that's something that I encourage people to do a lot with food is, you know, again, just being curious, non-judgmental, and noticing what comes up for you when you eat certain things. Or like, for example, again, similar to how a lot of people turn to alcohol in the evening, a lot of people I work with turn to food in the evening, or they're, you know, binge eating in the evening, or mindlessly snacking or whatever it is. And, you know, of course, I don't want them to beat themselves up about it, but instead right. say, okay, can I check in and notice what's coming up for me? What is driving this behavior? How do I feel when I do this versus when I don't? And like you said, we don't have to capitalize on every single opportunity we have to have that thing because it's always there, right? Same with, I mean, for those of us who are privileged and that we always have access to food, of course, you right. know, we always have that ability to have it later if we want to, or have it the next day. And so I think having that reminder that we don't have to say yes every single time can be helpful and also empowering to know that we have the choice. So I think that's a really helpful perspective. And it's tricky because, you know, I'm very much, you know, I encourage intuitive eating and, you know, kind of a non-diet approach. And
I love that.
Not all or nothing kind of thing with food. But alcohol is unique in that, like you said, it's a different, it has a different unique effect on our bodies and our minds. And so sometimes I do agree with you that sometimes it might be helpful to kind of take a step back for maybe a longer period of time versus with food, where sometimes if we put certain things on a pedestal and say, okay, I can never have cake or cookies or whatever it may be, we just like want it so much more. And I'm sure that's the case for people with alcohol in some situations as well. But I don't know. It's just, it's a tricky, tricky topic.
It is. It is. I will say, you know, plowing through a bottle of wine is different than plowing through a cake. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just is. It just is due to the nature of alcohol itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause it's a substance, you know, right? I mean,
it's a
substance. And it's a depressant.
Exactly. Exactly. So yeah. I do see very, I think there's more similarities than not for sure, mm-hmm. but I do think alcohol has to be treated a little bit different. And two, there's some major neuro pathways going on there that really have to kind of have a clear moment of something new to replace that experience to feel that empowerment. But I love what you just said about choice. I always mm-hmm. say I drink what I want when I want. I don't say I'm in recovery. I don't say I'm not working a 12-step program. Again, nothing wrong with that and yeah. nothing wrong with those words. But right. for me, I love the fact that I can have alcohol anytime I want. I'm choosing not to because it yeah. doesn't serve me and it's my lifestyle choice. Mm-hmm. Just like some people are gluten-free, mm-hmm. some people are vegan. I really think some people are alcohol-free. Mm-hmm. For a variety of reasons, like your listener said.
Yeah.
But I want to go back to something else you said as well, which again, we really align on, which is this whole take everything as a moment of curiosity and use mm-hmm. that as feedback. You know, when women do my 21-day reset program and they drink on day 7 or day 17, hey, it's okay.
Yeah.
Hey, no sweat. Don't, it's like a marathon. You don't go back to the beginning because you fell down on mile 17 mm-hmm. and start the whole race over. My gosh, right. nobody's there. The gun went off. Everybody's
right.
Run your race. Mm-hmm. Get back up where you are, dust off, go, wow, okay. I'm going to keep going. Which way, which direction am I going? That matters more than speed, it's direction.
Mm-hmm.
So in our group, we use language, you know, like that's not a setback. It's valuable feedback. Forget mm-hmm. the mistake, but remember the lesson.
Yeah.
That's the gold. That's the good stuff. In fact, mm-hmm. when people take my challenge and they slip up, it's actually, you know, like, come on out and tell us about it. That's going to help yeah. everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really actually celebrated to be vulnerable and honest and curious than it is to be perfect, postured, and check all the boxes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that you said it's not a setback, it's valuable feedback. That's so, so incredibly true. And once again, you know, I know I sound like a broken record, but just so much of this overlaps where people, you know, that I talk to will do extreme diets and they feel like they failed if they slip up. And it's like this on again, off again, like you said, on the wagon or off the wagon kind of thing. And it's like this vicious cycle. If we're constantly beating ourselves up, if we're not perfect, then that's just like, it's not serving you in any way. So definitely just like, again, being curious, being non-judgmental, going through the process and just really getting curious about how you feel physically without it. And again, you know, I heard from so many of my people from my community that they have cut out or reduced alcohol and feel so much better. They're sleeping better. Their mood is better. Their anxiety has, you know, improved significantly. Better energy that makes me want to exercise and do all these other things to care for my body. So it can be a positive thing. And again, there's plenty of people who are able to have a healthy balance with alcohol. And again, for me, like I'm not someone who enjoys like winding down at the end of the day with alcohol. Like that doesn't actually even come to my mind really. I would personally rather have some chocolate or something than have alcohol, but I don't feel like I need it. Like you said, at the end of the day, I'm not like, okay, I need something. Like I deserve something. I made it to the end of the day. Now I need to like treat myself with something. Okay, I have to tell you guys about one of my absolute favorite things that I'm pretty confident that you need in your life as well. We're all on our phones for a large portion of every day, right? So why not make it easier and more comfortable to hold your phone or prop it up with a nifty little gadget? I'm talking about my love handle phone grip. I'm seriously obsessed with this thing. So it's a stretchy strap that you can put on the back of your phone, but you can still lay your phone flat or stick it in your back pocket. It also has a little kickstand on the back so you can prop your phone up, which is probably my favorite feature that I'm using constantly. It even has a super strong magnet on the back. They have tons of cute designs and you can stick them on any phone case. If you've been looking for something like this, look no further. Use my affiliate code WellnessForTheWin for 10% off your purchase of Love Handle. All right, let's get back to the show. So can you speak to some other ways to like unwind and relax without alcohol, if that is something that people are so used to turning to, you know, maybe on a nightly basis?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Absolutely. And I think that was the biggest challenge for me initially was, what else do I do then? You can't just take out drinking and leave a void and just be like, well, I'm just not doing anything right now. Mm-hmm. The routine and the pattern and the ritual of self-care is really different than what I was doing. I thought drinking sounds crazy to say out loud now. Mm-hmm. I actually equated drinking with self-care, which now I see them as like polar opposite, because one is serving me. And I wouldn't say people drink in a mindful, healthy way because it's self-care. It's more like for fun or social.
Yeah.
But I was using it like the reward, the pampering, like the Bitmoji girl who's in the bathtub with the bubbles and the wine glass. I was like, there we go. I love her. But yes, for me, so I really had to have different alternatives for me. And this doesn't work for everybody, but I think it works really well for women in the gray area drinking zone, is to have alcohol-free alternatives. Oh my goodness. If you follow me on Instagram, you know that I constantly am showing de-alcoholized wine. They've made it now where you can actually enjoy the wine grape or a taste that's similar without the alcohol. Mm-hmm. For some people, they're like, no way, Jose, that trips me up. I'm trying to take a break. I don't want to get anywhere near anything that resembles.
Right.
That's cool. Again, you do you. But for me, I'm a Texas girl. I live in Fort Worth, Texas, I quit drinking right before summer, and there was no way I wanted to give up a cold beer by the pool or doing yard work.
Yeah.
So I found a couple of non-alcoholic beers that tasted good. I really only wanted one. It's not like I was chasing a buzz. There was no buzz.
Right.
But I really enjoy the taste. So for me, that helped. And I really had to pre-plan that. I had to make sure, very similar to food, I'm sure, that I had good alternatives in place instead of just nothing. I had to pre-decide and pre-plan. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So that helped me a lot. And then also, this was a real practical thing that I've done, is I switched my schedule. For me, I had the most resolve in the mornings. I had the most good intentions. So that's when I was, you know, having my quiet time on the back patio, doing my prayer and meditation. And then I would go work out. And then I would go to, you know, get my errands done. And I'd juice my kale. Seriously, big juicer over here. So I'm like juicing kale in the same kitchen. I'm plowing through Pinot Grigio like 6 hours later. So I would do all the things that, I kind of started switching around. I would walk my dog in the morning. So what I started doing was flipping things around and going to the grocery store in the morning, not the grocery store at 4:00 p.m. scrambling for what I was going to cook my family dinner. And just ended up buying a bottle of wine at the cash wrap at Target because I told myself no 25 times while I was in the store.
Yeah.
I was like, never mind. Who cares? I deserve it. Nobody's going to notice anyway. Whatever. You know, I've got 6 more hours in the mom's job. Mm-hmm. You know, this is my time.
Yeah.
So I started going to the grocery store in the mornings and keeping myself out of the grocery store when my blood sugar was low between 3 and 5 p.m. And instead, I started walking my dog later in the day instead of in the morning. I started literally replacing some of the times where I needed to have a distraction and I needed to have that other thing to do with my hands. I started finding, I'm a little bit crafty. And so during that time I was, you know, doing my Etsy store and doing my thing. So I found like all kinds of different shows to be involved in that made me have to produce with my hands. So I was listening to podcasts, working with my hands instead of just sitting in front of the TV, watching Netflix with an empty hand.
Yeah.
So little things like that really helped me a lot.
Yeah. Those are good tips. Yeah. Just figuring out a different routine and a different way to go about your evening or whenever it is that you may find
and
yourself unwinding.
Deprived.
Right.
Yeah. I didn't feel like I was depriving myself if I had a non-alcoholic beverage or was walking my dog at 6 o'clock because I wasn't drinking. You know, once I started drinking in the evening, it's like, I just kind of lost the evening. I was like, well, there goes productivity.
Yeah.
There goes anything really meaningful that I can really be getting done. I just kind of checked out.
Yeah.
And started literally winding down. Because it felt good for the first 20, 30 minutes, but then that depressant starts kicking in. And then the only way to bring that back up is to drink more. And that's why opening that bottle of wine at 5, for those of you out there who are listening, who are like, yeah, and I have the first glass and it's done by 5:30. Okay. That's cute. That's 30 minutes. That's what are we going to do? We're going to have another one. It's only 5:30. And then before you know it, you're having the third one while you're cleaning the dishes and it's only 8 p.m. And then at that point for me, this is what I call the bottle breakdown. I would look at the bottle and seriously, I would be like, wow, it's been 3 hours. I've been drinking water. I've eaten food. It's not like I'm just sitting there just drinking up a storm by myself, but I kind of was, but it was just in my own life. And I would look at the bottle and I would think, wow, Jen, good one. Good one, girl. Did it again. Did the Bikram 90-minute yoga class today. That's good. Check, check. Did the juicing the kale. Check, check. And now you've had 2-3 glasses of white wine. Now I'm looking at the bottle and there's a quarter of it left. I don't know about you, but for me, I was like, bummer, get that gone. It's I'm looking at it. It feels like defeat already. I've already drank more than I really wanted to. I already feel like keep in mind, the wine is talking. I mean, it's in me.
Right.
So it's not like I've got my sober mind looking at that fourth glass. Thinking rationally, clearly, I've got 2-3 glasses in me going, just do it, do it. And before I know it, I'm having that fourth glass in the bathtub, like the Bitmoji girl. I've recycled the bottle and I drank a bottle of wine.
Yeah.
On my own at nighttime, all while doing kids' homework. No one in my family, I say they didn't notice. I think they did. I think they just kind of saw mom was kind of there, but not all there. Mm-hmm. And that's the emotional side of drinking, is I was just playing small in my own life. Mm-hmm. And for someone listening, that may be that second glass of wine, not the fourth glass. My goodness, it took me a minute to work up to that, but not that long. I mean, I didn't really start drinking on a regular habitual basis until my mid-30s.
Yeah.
And it really needed to stop by my mid-40s. So I had about a decade run in there. I had a decade career of drinking that really created that much tolerance.
Yeah.
Which also creates a little bit of dependence. They just kind of go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah. It's, you know, humans, we're such creatures of habit. And, you know, again, getting into those routines and that structure, and just, that's something that you just do. And especially when like you're family or friends kind of like know you as, oh, that's what this yeah. person does. You know, it just becomes almost part of your identity at times. So I think, again, just being, you know, courageous enough to maybe break that cycle or again, challenge it and say, okay, what mm-hmm. if I change something? Like, what might that feel like? And it's hard to make those decisions and those changes, but it can be very, very worth it as well. So I appreciate you walking us through that. Cause again, I think so many people will be like nodding their heads like, yep, I relate to that. And like you said, just not being present. And that's something like for me, I very much, you know, did the binge drinking thing in college, like way, way too much alcohol and even a little bit beyond college. And now I'm proud of the fact that now that I'm 30, I definitely have such a, you know, healthier relationship with alcohol. And I too have noticed where I'm like, I can have one or two glasses and I feel, or, you know, I'm actually not a huge wine person. I'm more of like a beer or margarita person, but I can have one or two beverages and be like, I'm satisfied. I can still safely drive. I can still have conversations and remember them, you know, right. that kind of thing. Right. And that's the biggest thing for me is like, thinking back to times where I drank so much that I didn't remember, like that's, first of all, terrifying and obviously not good for your health or your brain or your liver or anything. And again, this is not to shame anyone who's in that place where they're doing those things, because I'm still, you know, if I go to a wedding or something, I will absolutely drink too much. Like I'm a human and like, you know, a lot of us do that, but I definitely do not enjoy doing that on a regular basis. And you know, just doing it socially, even socially now, I'm just more aware of the amount that I take in because it does affect me so much. And so again, just kind of having that awareness, I think is the key.
You know, and what I see from just women I get to work with is, women your age, younger moms, 30s, mm-hmm. Even late 20s. Are really becoming more aware, more mindful. Quite mm-hmm. honestly, it's my age group. We're the ones, maybe, you know, y'all are watching us going, yikes, I don't know that I want to do that. Or you got it out of your system younger. Mm-hmm. Again, I didn't really drink in high school, college, or my 20s, which yeah. is somewhat unique to me. But yet I've worked with enough women to know now that someone out there is listening to me going, hey, I just started drinking and I already sure. can tell it's different. Mm-hmm. And so I just applaud your age group for you personally and your age group, because I really do want to delve into that kind of mommy wine juice culture, that mm-hmm. Yeti at the park,
yeah,
the Halloween night. Mm-hmm. I just think that, and again, that's not everyone, but just the mindfulness to go, okay, I think I'm going to challenge that's just what we do. Mm-hmm. That is like, how's that working? You know,
right.
what is that like for our marriages, mm-hmm. for our children, but ultimately ourselves?
Right.
I never really factored in my own relationship with me mm-hmm. being so important to keep promises to myself, to have self-respect for me, mm-hmm. not based on who's around me or what they're doing.
Hey friends, interrupting this conversation really fast to tell you about a brand I love, and that is Hill & Hazel. Hill & Hazel is an online boutique owned by my friend Hillary that sells the freaking cutest clothes at affordable prices. She launches new items every single week, and I promise you will not be disappointed. Check out her page at Shop Hill & Hazel on Instagram and you'll see what I mean. Whether you need some cute tops for going out with friends, a new dress for weddings, baby showers, or other festivities, or even shoes and accessories, she has you covered. She offers a great mix of basics and closet staples, as well as fun and unique items that you will love. You can use my code SHANNA10 to get 10% off your purchase at hillandhazel.com. Happy shopping! Right, and like you said too, you know, even if you're not necessarily just having alcohol, like you said, when you're cooking dinner or, you know, doing stuff at home. But if it feels like every single time you have an occasion or go to dinner with a girlfriend or, you know, all those things add up. And then, like you said, all of a sudden you're like, wow, I'm drinking 6 nights a week and that doesn't really feel good for me. So,
well, and I can just tell you, because a lot of your listeners probably are closer to your age than mine. And I would love to be here as a bit of a cautionary tale because I didn't really have one. Mm-hmm. I didn't really have a cautionary tale of people older than me who had struggled with alcohol in mm-hmm. any way. It's just the way I grew up. It's where I lived. Mm-hmm. It's just the age of my life. And so, yeah, I would just, again, not a fear monger, not to come at alcohol as it's bad, but more like, you see, for the longest time, I was asking myself the wrong question. Is mm-hmm. it bad enough, Jen? Is it bad enough? And for years throughout my 30s and young 40s, I kept being able to answer the question, no, it's not bad enough because it's not like so-and-so or it's mm-hmm. not like that.
Right.
And I really switched gears and I started asking myself, and anybody can ask themselves this at any time about anything. Is it good enough? Instead mm-hmm. of, is it bad enough? And I stopped comparing myself to other people mm-hmm. because I could always find someone who was drinking more than me, more often than me, having greater consequences than me always. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so that kept me trapped.
Yeah. And that totally applies to so many areas of life. Like you said, you know, that's a similar thing that I'm trying to think. I think there's a book about this, like, basically about eating disorders. Like, a lot of people don't seek help with their eating disorder because they're like, oh, well, it's not bad enough. I don't, you know, right. have a problem like this person who's, you know, hospitalized for anorexia or whatever it may be. So people, yes, that comparison piece is really, really tricky. So trying to avoid that and saying, okay, I'm not going to compare myself to anyone else's situation. What about me and how I'm caring for myself and showing up in my life for myself and my people and all of that. So I love that point. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, you didn't necessarily grow up around people who had problems with alcohol. However, I had several of my followers mention that they grew up with like an alcoholic parent or alcoholic family member. And so they've either, you know, avoided it because of that, or they've been very careful and cautious about their consumption of alcohol. Do you happen to know like what the percentage or likelihood is of people becoming an alcoholic if they have it in their family, or, you know, what does that kind of look like?
Yeah, great question. I can tell you, statistically speaking, those on the drinking spectrum that really fall in the physically addicted to alcohol out of even heavy drinkers is about 10%.
Okay.
So about 10% of people who struggle with alcohol use disorder, who are on that spectrum. So you're really looking at a pretty good size bell curve there, where most people are smack dab in that gray area in the mm-hmm. middle. Mm-hmm. As far as there being a genetic disposition or gene, there is a lot of debate about that. There's a lot mm-hmm. of different views on that, scientifically speaking. So, my personal perspective from what I've learned, and again, someone could argue with this, so that's mm-hmm. okay. Do your own research, people. In right. fact, that would be great.
Yeah, absolutely.
I highly recommend it.
For sure.
To actually do your own research. But there really isn't an addictive gene. There mm-hmm. is such thing as precursors with a personality that would tend more towards addictive behaviors.
Mm-hmm. Got
so
it.
You've got some of those personality markers, mm-hmm. which are usually people that are high control, high empaths. A lot of people feel so deeply. The acute feeling is something that is trying to numb down. Mm-hmm. So you can look at the markers towards addictive behavior, which would apply to alcohol and other things. Mm-hmm. So that's why we have to worry or not worry, but concern ourselves with more about why we're doing what we're doing than what we're actually doing mm-hmm. oftentimes, because if it's not one thing, it can be another. I can switch my alcohol use to another use of numbing. I could have mm-hmm. turned to food, shopping, Netflix, mm-hmm. The list goes on and on. And so right. some of that is addictive behavior.
Yeah.
But the chances, and a lot of it too, is just the way you've seen something done mm-hmm. is your model for how it's done.
Right.
And right. so for me, it was perfectly normal to not drink because my parents didn't drink. Mm. I'll tell you why, because they had their own cautionary tale with their parents.
Okay.
They were the children of adults who struggled with alcohol. Mm. I was the beneficiary of being a child of those children as adults mm. that had the cautionary tale. Mm-hmm. So there I go, not drinking until my 30s. And it just goes to show that alcohol really can affect people without that genetic marker or without having parents that modeled drinking for me. I did not see my dad come home and go to the fridge and open that beer after, you know, plopping his briefcase down or setting the hard hat down.
Right.
You know, like right. I didn't see my mom cooking and drinking, but I sure did on TV. Mm-hmm. I sure did in the movies. I sure did in society. So by the time I was in my 30s, I felt like I kind of met all the criteria that I learned when I was young about, like, don't drink and drive. Don't drink unless you're 21. Don't yeah. drink, get drunk. Okay, got it. And I applied all those rules to my younger days, but they didn't apply when I was older. I was like, whoops. I'm well over 21. I'm 31. You know, now mm-hmm. when those rules didn't apply and I didn't really have open communication or discussion with anyone about alcohol either.
Yeah.
And that's a big part of this journey is being able to wrestle with this out loud. That's why I encourage women to just go on these 21-day challenges or take a reset or just start talking about it with people mm-hmm. and say, hey, how's it going? People never talk about the hangovers. They only talk about the fun they had.
Right.
You know, so I just encourage people to have more honest conversations without labels, mm-hmm. without rules, without shame, without judgment, but instead just start this dialogue of like, whoa, do you ever drink more than you want to? Do you ever drink more than you mean to? How do you feel the next day? When do you start thinking about drinking during the day? Is it right when it's presented to you, or were you kind of thinking about it mid-afternoon and kind of counting down? Like, I think if people have more candid conversations about it, it can be more of a dialogue going on mm-hmm. out there, which is really what I needed because it felt so taboo to even talk about. It felt like, right. oh my gosh, if I'm talking about alcohol, then I really must have a problem. Mm-hmm. And even when I was curious about alcohol and really wouldn't have put myself in the problem category, just more of the unhealthy relationship, I had nowhere to go to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's what we want to change.
Yeah. And I think it would be very interesting for people to start to have those conversations like with their girlfriends. And because I think so many people would be like, oh, you know, I kind of feel the same way. Like I also would like to reduce my alcohol, or I also sometimes struggle or feel like I drink too much, or, you know, like something that comes to mind for me is like going to dinner with girlfriends or something. And, you know, it, like you said, it's very normal for everyone to order a drink or whatever, which is fine and great, you know, and it can be a fun social thing. But it's also like if you go and don't want to drink, again, everyone assumes, are you pregnant or, you know, right. why aren't you drinking or whatever? And so just being able to normalize, like, you know what, I just don't feel like drinking tonight. Like that should be, it shouldn't be such a big deal to say that right. and make that decision and make that choice. Because I think everyone sits down and like assumes everyone else is going to get a drink. So they feel like they have to get a drink.
Totally.
And, you know, that pressure is always there. But, you know, hopefully we get to a place where it's not just like 100% automatic assumed that everyone's going to get one. It's like, we can make that choice and it's not a huge freaking deal.
Oh, I love that. I love yeah. that. It, again, at all through my 30s and 40s, I'm in that girlfriend group as well. I mean, mm-hmm. it was like, that's what we did. And mm-hmm. Again, I do live in Texas. So the margaritas, I mean, we
yeah. got what's going on down here. Yep. And, love me a margarita.
Oh yeah. We had our favorite marg spots. And yeah. so, but you're right. It just became so expected that if we didn't do it, or if I didn't do it, I felt odd man out or right. kind of like, what's wrong? And there are becoming more alternatives on menus now as well, where it's just like, I still want a fun drink or.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Totally. Yeah. That's what I've found since being pregnant this time and last time too, I guess, but more so this time I'm like seeking out mocktails or asking, you know, can yeah. you make me a fun mocktail or something? And it's like, that's totally an option and something that we can still do and feel like, you know, if we want that social aspect and we want to drink something fun and fancy besides water or soda or something, we right. can do that. And that's okay. So yeah, I do think that that's becoming more common is having those, you know, alcohol-free options, yes. which I did want to ask you about. I know you mentioned, you know, some like alcohol-free wine. Do you have a favorite brand of that, by the way?
I do. There's two companies that, well, I mean, I've got more, but there's two that come to mind. I really like Drink Joyous.
Okay.
That's their Instagram handle, Drink Joyous.
Okay.
They just came out with a cab that is really good. It's really hard to find a good de-alcoholized red wine. And that's different than grape juice. Mm-hmm. I think too often people are like, why bother? Like, if I'm just going to go get like of Welch's grape juice, I think I'd rather skip the calories.
Right, right.
Sugar, like, what am I doing?
Totally.
So it's really nice to find, you know, adult beverages that are still crafted, that are still good. And then I also like Shirley.
Okay, I've heard of that one.
Their Instagram handle is Drink Shirley, and they've got a Brut, a Rosé. I just put it on my Thanksgiving table, and it was gorgeous, and it was fun, and it felt festive.
Yeah.
And yeah, so... Yeah,
awesome.
Seriously, I do, and I work with those companies because I genuinely do enjoy them. There's some bad stuff out there too. I won't name any names, but you know, they're still trying to figure it out. I think it's a new industry. It's grown by over 200% in the last 3 years. So it is a niche market that is growing, and I think they're really figuring it out. Like, I think the demand is rising, so the suppliers are able to make more and spend more to do it. Again, small businesses, they're going up against the giants, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But even like Heineken 00, they just took out $50 million in ad spend this last year to promote their 00 brand.
Wow.
And so it's super exciting. I feel like, you know, we're on the cusp of kind of this sober curious movement and the sober minded movement, which is totally different than a sobriety club type thing. So,
yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that made me want to read. I wanted to read through some of the responses I got from people.
Yeah.
Because again, I think people assume that if they were to stop drinking, they would be like the only person that they know that doesn't, you know, use alcohol. But I got countless responses from people. Like, someone said, I stopped drinking when my sister went to rehab and I have never felt healthier. Someone said, I've been sober for 6 years and I absolutely love sobriety. Someone said, haven't had a sip of alcohol in 7 years and absolutely love it. Have never regretted it. Someone said that they were really excited to hear this episode because they've been reading, you might be familiar with these books, but someone said they were reading Naked Mind and Quit Like a Woman. I assume both of those are about becoming sober. Are you familiar with those?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. Someone said lowering alcohol has really helped my mood, my sleep, et cetera, which again, you know, even just reducing the intake can make a world of difference in how you feel and your health. So several people actually said that, you know, someone said my need for alcohol comes and goes in waves. I find that I binge when I'm stressed and typically alcohol just makes me a lot more anxious. I'm honestly not sure why I even still drink, you know, and I think a lot of people feel that way. You know, they have those regrets. It's like it's again, like food, you know, it sounds like it's going to feel good in the moment. And then afterward, you're like, ugh, now I feel horrible and, you know, physically and mentally and emotionally, all these things. And so, yeah, just really a really good conversation to just encourage that awareness and reflection and curiosity more than anything. But I was really impressed, not impressed. I mean, I don't want people to feel like, you know, it's not impressive that they are drinking still, but I guess surprised a little bit at how many responses I did get from people who were like, I'm sober, I'm alcohol free, absolutely love it, feel amazing. So I definitely think it's something that more people are going to become curious about. And like you said, the need and the demand is growing for some of those non-alcohol options. So whether you're sober curious or you're pregnant or whatever the case may be, you know, there's more stuff coming for you, which is great.
Exactly. It's exciting. It's exciting. And I've watched in the last 6 years or so since I even kind of got on the scene, because before I started my journey, I just had no clue at all. I didn't know about any of this talk. And again, it was just starting to stir. But it's very exciting. I think that, yeah, people are just more mindful, more curious. You know, COVID and the whole pandemic and the lockdowns, that really did a number. But I think it also... You know, all the quarantinis out there, that was a thing. That was a real thing. People were like, you know what? We're just Zooming all day. We're not waiting for 5 o'clock anymore. Let's just get the party started anytime, because you're not driving, you're in your pajamas. And people were like, let's just drink about it in the afternoon while the world feels like it's crashing down.
Right.
But I think people have really collectively come out of that, realizing that even if they didn't have a struggle or a problem with alcohol before, how quickly I worked with so many women who were like, whoa, easy. I had like a really cool social relationship with drinking and then COVID and then before I knew it. And that's really, you know, like anything, it can just sneak up on you. And so I just want to encourage women, if you've kind of recently had your relationship with alcohol change, you're not alone. The stats are out there. It's very clear. That did a number on us collectively. And it's okay to tap the brakes. It's okay to go, wait a minute, something changed. There was a lot going on, a lot of anxiety, a lot of uncertainty. Alcohol was deemed essential. You know, and I think for a lot of people, it really shifted and people are coming out of that now. Like, I cannot sustain that. Like, that is not working for me. And so that's exciting too, that people can emerge.
Totally. Yeah. And it's funny because I, you know, ironically, I was also pregnant during most of the pandemic, you know, or the worst of it, I guess, or the, you know, May of 2020, I was, I got pregnant. So I, you know, during majority of the worst of it, I was unable to drink and I was able to witness the impact on people's alcohol consumption. And so it was very interesting to kind of be an outsider looking, you know, at how that was impacting people. And like you said, the just increase in alcohol intake. And honestly, I mean, if I wasn't pregnant during that time, I probably would have increased my intake too. And so, So it's just like you said, I think we're at a point now where people are like, whoa, okay, let me just like, you know, pause for a second and do a quick check of what I'm doing and how I'm feeling, you know, all of those things. So yeah, just so many good, good topics. And I love this conversation. And so that brings me to, I was going to ask, you know, some of your favorite, obviously I'm going to give you a chance to share some of yours, but any other like favorite books or resources that you have found helpful, especially like in the beginning of your sober curious journey that, you know, really helped kind of shift your mindset or perspective.
Yep, absolutely. And you mentioned
a couple podcasts.
Yeah. Podcasts for sure. Wow. Early on in 2017, it was like, just like a tsunami of information because I didn't really know anything. I was just taking it all in. So that year I read a ton of books, did various programs, found coaches, mentors. Definitely This Naked Mind really made an impact on me from a mindset perspective. Also love the work of William Porter. If you go to alcoholexplained.com, I think you can read the first five chapters of his book for free. He's a friend of mine. He's done great work. And it's so cool that like I read his book in 2017 and now he's a friend of mine. I'm like,
yeah,
wow,
that's cool.
He changed my life. and many others. What I'm really excited about is there's a new book coming out this spring of 2023. I'm not sure when this podcast will drop, but it's called Intoxicating Lies. And it's really, I think, written towards even a younger audience and a current book. There are so many great books that were written 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago that are still true today. But I love some of these emerging books that I'm hearing about that are really touching on some of the current events, like post-COVID, like post, and also written from some younger moms that have kids still at home. So would love to share those with your audience. To look into. But yeah, it makes all the difference in the world to keep educating yourself and researching. And the conversation is alive and well out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Which brings me to you. And, you know, first of all, thank you so much for coming on and sharing again your vulnerability with your journey. I think it'll resonate with so many people who are, you know, possibly in the same boat right now and, you know, kind of reassessing what they want to do with their relationship with alcohol. And, you know, I'd love to hear more about where, first of all, where can people find you, some of the resources that you have available for people, and tell us a little bit more about your book that's coming.
Yeah, it's been quite a project. So really the first thing I'd love to share is for any woman listening, again, any age, any place on the drinking spectrum, you could just be like, I don't even know if I need this, but wouldn't hurt to kind of look into it, pop the hood. I always say, pull off the drinking highway, go to a rest stop, pop the hood, see what's going on. The best way to do that is even just download my free guide. It's totally free. If you go to SoberSis.com, that's easy to remember, you can download my free guide and you can get on my email list. And that's where I continue just to try to give value, share stories of my own experience of how I was in my 30s thinking nothing of it. And then before I know it, in my 40s, and I'm like feeling trapped. So like, how did that happen? And so I think downloading that free guide is a great first step for someone who's just like, you know what, I've got a wedding coming up. I'd like to not overdo it there. How do I even do that?
Yeah.
And like even looking at an event or a certain time where you just want to take a break. So the free guide's a great thing. As I mentioned earlier, I do run a 21-day reset challenge at the beginning of every month.
Okay.
So this is a monthly challenge. It is at the first of the month. So anytime your listener is listening to this, they can catch the next one. It's like the train may have left the station. You can get the next one. And in between, I have what's called the runway, where I share videos, ways to prepare, how to kind of stock your fridge with alcohol-free options, some really healthy things. And again, if they're working with you to get their diet and their nutrition and their mindset right, this is going to dovetail in really good. And so the 21-day reset is, if you link in my bio at SoberSis on Instagram, that's another great place to find me. It's just one word, SoberSis, as in sister, but short, sis. And so that, you know, I've got all these links in my bio, but the 21-day reset challenge is really the entry point for someone to come into our, I'll call it our sober-minded sisterhood, where people are in there who want to drink less or not at all. And it's a real forum for sober curiosity. And then after that, of course, because people do tend to feel so good, they want to go on. I do have an online alcohol-free lifestyle course, as well as a community for women who are just living it. They're just living the lifestyle and they want community because it is a little bit against the grain to be totally alcohol-free.
Yeah.
And so I have a community where that's just, that's what we do. That's what we celebrate. In the book, Look Alive, Sis, 40 Days to Awaken Your Sober Mind is coming out. Not sure exactly when, probably look for it earliest March of 2023, for sure April. And I'll keep you posted on that as well. And it's a 40-day reader. It's not like a biography or a long book where you're just sitting down reading from beginning to end. It's more of like, hey, I just need some encouragement. What can I read today that would just kind of keep me on track? And that's what this book is about.
Awesome. That's so exciting. Congratulations on that. Yeah. That is great. And this will likely go live, I don't know, January, I believe. That'll be great timing. You know, again, of course, everyone has goals in the new year and could be a good one to just consider and be curious about. So that sounds like it'll be a great support, just having that encouragement. Like you said, that daily little pick-me-up of encouragement will be awesome. So thank you so much. Again, of course, I will link everything for you guys in the show notes so you can easily find Jen and all of her resources. And any last things that you'd like to share, anything that we missed today?
Oh, that's such a good question. Because of course, there always is. You always read these great conversations and you're like, oh, I wish I would have said.
Yeah, I know.
You know, I think it just really goes back to listen to that little small voice inside, that little nudge that we all have internally. We all have it. I had it in my young 30s, but I didn't really act upon it until my mid 40s. I wish I would have acted on it sooner. I could have saved myself a little bit of heartache and a little bit of just kind of wandering around. Although, you know, everything's for a reason and for a purpose. So I have no regrets. But I would have listened to that voice sooner had I realized the freedom that was on the other side of listening to that voice. And so if you've got that little nudge, if you've heard our conversation today and you're thinking, yeah, I probably ought to do something about that, but it's too scary or it's not bad enough, I invite you to go ahead and lean into it a little bit more, because I don't think you'll regret it. I think if anything, you'll be surprised at the amount of freedom that's on the other side. And like your listeners that wrote in, and how good it feels. I don't think I was prepared for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Give yourself that opportunity to maybe be surprised and amazed at how you can feel so good. So awesome. Well, thank you so much. This was amazing. And I really appreciate your time and your wisdom and again, vulnerability with all of this, and can't wait to share this conversation.
Yeah, thank you. It was a great one.
I hope you enjoyed this episode and took away some tips or wisdom that you can apply to boost your health and happiness starting today. If you did, I would love it if you would subscribe to the podcast and leave a rating and review to help other women like you find my show and get inspired to start living a life they love. Also, take a quick screenshot and share it to your Instagram stories. Be sure to tag me at Wellness for the Win so I can see why you love today's show. Thank you so much for listening, and talk to you next time.